Ireland have been drawn in Group D for the Euro 2016 qualifying draw. We are going to discuss Ireland's opponents. But first, just to set the mood, set the ambiance. The tone, I guess. The ambiance.
Yeah.
Very nice.
That was said in French.
We couldn't think of any more cliched music to talk about the Euro 2016 qualifying draw than the final countdown by Europe.
The band is called Europe and it's Euro qualifying. See what we did there?
It's very clever.
Yeah, I know how I thought of it, to be honest.
Yeah.
It's a good tune, though.
That's why you're paying the big bucks.
It's a good song.
So, Ireland will go up against Germany, Poland, Scotland, Georgia and Gibraltar in the bid to reach the finals in France. I keep on thinking of Arrested Development and Job every time I hear this song.
My favourite character on Arrested Development, Joe Bluth, failed magician.
Come on.
Oh, come on.
So what we're going to do is we're going to run through Ireland's opponents. We're not going to bother with Germany because everybody knows about them, basically.
That they're brilliant.
Yeah, and Ireland
efficient.
Aren't. Good at penalties.
Any more cliches?
I don't think so.
We owe them a lot of money as well. So
we too, apparently, yeah.
So let's keep going.
So we're going to look at Poland, Scotland, Georgia and Gibraltar. We are going to give you a few facts about each team. I'm going to start with Poland. Poland finished third in the 1974 and 1982 World Cups.
That's very interesting. I was there in November. Beautiful country.
I was going to say you were there for the 1982 World Cup.
I wasn't even born.
Yeah, that would have been pretty awesome.
Mm.
And how was Poland?
Absolutely lovely. Was in Warsaw and Krakow. Beautiful places, beautiful people, and very friendly as well.
Poland's most capped player is Michael Zewlikow.
Yeah.
102 appearances with 3 goals and a 13-year career. He also played for Anderlecht and Olympiakos.
It's very interesting. Yeah. There.
And their top goal scorer is Vladimirez Leonard Lubanski, who scored 48 goals for 75 appearances, which is a massive record.
And rolls off the tongue as well.
It does. Yeah. Even his club record is really, really impressive. He scored 279 goals from 519 games. That's more than a goal every 2 games.
It's very impressive. Very, very impressive. Is that Poland done?
Pretty much.
I will jump in here and tell you a bit about Georgia. I have to actually admit, though, my research of Georgia slowed down because when you Google search Georgia, Georgia Salpa comes up.
Yeah, I'm sure you like really upset about that.
So there was a bit of a tangent on my.
So this is just going to be Georgia Salpa facts, basically, isn't it?
I'm a professional person, so I got back to Georgia, the football team. Their most recognisable player, I think, for Irish fans is Zurab Kijanashvili. He played with Rangers, Blackburn, and Reading a few years ago. He's 38 and he's still playing international football, which is pretty incredible. We beat them actually in June 2013, 4-0 in a friendly at the Aviva Stadium. They were pretty impressive in World Cup. Well, they were okay in World Cup qualifying, but they had a really good result, 0-0 against France.
Yeah.
So that's a pretty solid result. They've never qualified for a big tournament, and their manager is a bit of a psychopath. The Newcastle legend, Tomori Kitzbühel.
Ah, yes.
Tomori, remember?
He was a ball gentleman, wasn't he?
Yes, he was, and he kind of like kicking advertising hoardings. Remember that? Well, to be honest, I have a lot more facts on Georgia Salpa, but this is a sports show, so let's continue.
We'll put those up on our website, right? So then we have Scotland. Their current boss is Gordon Strachan. So when Ireland play Scotland, there'll be two former Celtic managers going head-to-head.
Interesting fact.
Mm. They've been in the World Cup 8 times, the Euros twice. They have never been past the first round.
Very interesting stuff.
Top goal scorer, if you had to guess.
Oh, Kenny Dalglish.
Correct. And...
oh, joint.
Joint.
Ali McCoist?
No, Dennis Law.
Oh.
Most cap player?
Kenny Dalglish.
Correct. And their highest FIFA ranking was 13 in October 2007.
Really?
Yeah.
13?
Yeah. And now I think they're like 185 million.
Jeez. Is that Scotland covered?
Pretty much, yeah.
Wow, really
extensive research here.
Pretty informed. Gibraltar are the kind of dark horse in this. Who knows
Gibraltar,
anything about them?
Rock of Gibraltar. Horse.
There you go. Done some extensive research on Gibraltar. A population of 30,000 people, which makes them the smallest member of UEFA. They have 600 registered footballers on the rock. That's what they call it locally.
The wrestler?
No, the island, The Rock. There's a movie about that actually a few years ago. Sean Connery started in it called The Rock.
Indeed.
That was about Alcatraz, though, not Gibraltar. It has 8 It has its own 18 league, and all the matches in the league are played in the National Stadium, a 5,000 seater Victoria Stadium. But their actual games in this qualifying will be played in Portugal. So if Irish fans want to head out to Portugal for a few days, that'll be quite nice. Most famous player is former Manchester United, Stoke, Sunderland, and Derby defender Danny Higginbottom.
Ah, yes.
Legend of the Premier League. And he obviously didn't get a call up for England all those years, so
he ended up playing.
He decided to play for Gibraltar because his mom is from there, and his uncle is also the team manager. So zero nepotism in Gibraltar. And the final fact is, I think if we don't hammer them, we may as well pack it in.
You probably could fit 600 footballers on the rock, the wrestler given the size of them. Like these days, anyway.
Your train of thought is very funny, but yeah, they're brand new to football at this level, so we should be putting 5, 6, 7, or 8 past these guys. So yeah, that's Gibraltar.
In all seriousness though, it does look like it could be between Ireland and Poland for that second spot. I mean, like, is that discounting Scotland a bit too easy?
Yeah, maybe it is. And even Georgia, I think they could be potentially a difficult opponent. Like I said, getting that draw against France was kind of, I suppose, shows what they can do when they're playing quite well. And those Eastern European teams are actually, like not to use a cliche, but they are a cliche, they're actually improving all the time.
Go on, call them a crack Eastern European outfit. Go on,
never,
you want to.
Never, I would never do that. And like you said, Scotland, I mean, Scotland have some decent players. So they could potentially be difficult for Ireland, but like you'd hope, I mean, the top two teams qualify, and God, you'd hope we're one of those two teams. But I don't think it's going to be easy.
No.
But fingers crossed. And it's exciting anyway, because I think this new era is going to bring some good times.
But it's a tough start for them as well, because they have to go to Georgia for their first game, which isn't ideal. You would have rather a home game against any of the countries, well, maybe Scotland or Gibraltar or Georgia, but heading away to Georgia is not going to be easy.
No, not at all. And like you said, I mean, these kind of qualification groups as well, it's all about momentum. If you get off to a really good start, you can see confidence going through teams, and then they go on and they might get results that they, I know, like, maybe kind of unusual results or unexpected results. So it's going to be difficult, but like Martin O'Neill said today, he said we shouldn't really be afraid of anyone in this group, well, bar Germany, but I think we have a really good chance, and I hope we do it.
Yeah, let's have a quick listen here to what Martin O'Neill had to say about the draw today.
Let us go positively into the group. That's taking aside that Germany, as I said earlier, the standing side, let's go for it. You know, I mentioned excitement there, and I think that's exactly what it is.
He's right though, we should go for it.
Yeah, absolutely.
There's no reason why we shouldn't.
Because if you play kind of cagey and cautious in these qualifying groups, I mean, you could fall away very, very quickly. And like, I think they're going to be positive though. We still haven't seen much of them because they've only played two games, yeah. So it's going to be interesting times. I can't wait to see the style of football. And I just, like I said, going into it with hope more than expectation, really.
Yeah, I'm
going
to head up to the Serbia game up in the Aviva. Is it Wednesday week?
Wednesday week, yeah.
Wednesday week, so looking forward to that one, and looking forward to seeing the team and how they play and stuff like that. But I'm cautiously optimistic.
Yeah, okay.
Yes, that's about as good as I get with the Irish national.
Yeah, and look, it's nice to see you actually have any interest in the whole thing again. So.
Yeah, for a change, yeah. Great. So it's the top two from each group that guaranteed automatic qualification for the finals. The third place teams have a game of rock, paper, scissors to see who gets in, I think. I'm not entirely sure how well that works out.
I'll ring you away for there. I'm not sure. You might be right though.
Go on to your man Gianni, who does the draw.
Yeah, I will.
He could probably talk to us in Irish. He knows every language in Europe.
Yeah, he's an impressive man.
So that is the Euro draw. Let us know your thoughts on it. You can text us 0833173336, or you can tweet us at Big Red Bench. Kind of tempted to play Europe throughout the show under everything.
Can you just play the start of it again? It's such an impressive tune. I think it makes us sound more impressive.
Sounds very ominous, doesn't it?
Yeah, very ominous. Our futures will be ominous if we don't stop playing it.
Yeah. So, or we could just like not play any more sport interviews and just play 80s classic rock tunes for the rest of the year.
I know a lot of people around Cork would be upset if we did that.
I'm sure that would go down.
Including John Caulfield, who came into us yesterday for an interview, so I'm sure we should play that.
He did indeed. We are less than 2 weeks out from the start of the new Electricity League season. City busy with their pre-season campaign as they get ready to take on St. Pat's and Turners Cross on March 7th. John Caulfield calling to me for a chat, and he says he's happy with the way things have been going so far.
Yeah, I suppose, look, we've been back since the 6th of January. We've played a number of friendly matches, and the guys' fitness, in fairness, is very, very good. And I suppose all of a sudden we're within less than 14 days within this first game of the season, so things are beginning to hot up. But yeah, I suppose the pre-season games have gone okay. Obviously, you'd prefer to play some teams of a higher quality, but it's been difficult from that point of view. And plus the fact, I suppose, the weather's been so bad, it has also made pitches very difficult as well, you know.
How have you been approaching the friendlies? Are you mixing up formations, personnel and kind of things like that?
Yeah, I suppose the crucial thing for the friendlies is, like, you need to give everyone a chance, and you're looking at different systems, different partnerships. And I think you can see that we've been juggling quite a bit, but obviously we're coming close now, and things have settled down, and we're trying to put the final pieces together, because you know, going into past match, whereas they're an established and a sort of a, I suppose they've been together for a number of years, and they're not going to have that many changes. For us, it's different with so many new players coming in, and obviously myself as well.
A couple of the players have hit the ground running as well, haven't they?
They have, really. I suppose you look at, you know, if you look in a lot of the games we've played, we've been getting quite a few goals, which is good. Yeah. You know, the other side is that we've been giving a few away, but, you know, I suppose the way I feel about it, we've done a lot of chopping and changing at the back and during matches, taking on and off guys, and that disrupts the pattern a small bit, but still, yeah, it has been good, and you know, there's been a lot of different goal scores too, which has helped.
Do you think the players have kind of come on board fully with your vision for the club at this stage?
I think, to be fair, it's very hard for some of the players from the outside coming in to understand what Cork means, and I suppose I am stressing that when they walk out in Turner's Cross on that Friday night, that they'll probably walk in front of the biggest crowd they've played for in Ireland, and that includes the lads that have been up in Derry and Sligo and whatever, because there's no doubt that as you know, Rory, that, you know, when the Cork people come behind you, we have the biggest following of any club, and so I think I'm trying to, you know, I think they're wondering, you know, they're probably listening to me wondering when I'm saying, look, you're going to have 5,000-7,000 people on the night, and they're probably wondering, because they're not used to that, but it is going to happen. I'm trying to say to you, legend, we need to be ready for it. So there's a bit of that, but at the same time, overall, the attitude of the squad has been absolutely fantastic, and they're really worked hard, you know.
You brought a couple of the the Avondale players in. Are you confident they can make the step up from Munster Senior League to League of Ireland?
Yeah, I suppose, look, at like everything else, I'm one of those guys that I give any guy a chance once he's at a certain level, and I would have known the lads from Avondale quite well, obviously, and John Cotter in particular as well, because he's been with them the last number of years, and O'Sullivan was a no-brainer because he deserved a chance, and he's really settled in, and he's pushing very close to starting position. Kevin Mulcahy also has come in, and again, a little bit behind in fitness, but ability wise is fantastic. Yeah. So from that point of view, both those guys will certainly feature throughout the season, I would think.
And are you happy with the strength of your squad now, or will there be one or two more before the week?
Well, the one and probably last remaining guy is David O'Leary, you know, who obviously has played with Limerick for the last 3 years. He's a Cork lad. We've agreed in principle he's to come to us. There's just one or two small little issues, but hopefully by Monday that he will sign, and he'll be the final piece of the panel for the moment.
You mentioned as well, like, the players coming in, trying to get a sense of the club. How important is it for you to have a strong Cork spine in this team?
Well, it's crucial, and the strength of Cork always over the years was when we had, you know, the majority of the panel were from Cork, and I think that's essential. And I think if you look at the panel, we have a panel roughly of 23, 24 players, and you're looking at 16, 17 from Cork, and that's crucial. And I suppose the other side to that is, you know, you look at the Dennehys, you know, I suppose when you look at those, I sort of include those in the Cork bracket, really, because their guys are down the road, and, you know, they played for the club, Darren Lash or Billy, a number of years ago, and plus the fact we have a big Kerry following, we have a big, obviously not outside of Cork, City and County, we have a big following from the likes of Kerry, Tip, so we pick up people from those areas as well, like, you know.
How much of a whirlwind has it been in the last couple of months, and how much are you looking forward to just actually getting on the pitch and playing football, so to speak?
Yeah, I think, I suppose, it's been crazy, really, because every day we meet over, and John Cotter is in every morning at 7, I'm in probably close to 8 o'clock, and we're there till 5 or 6, and it's been nearly like that 6 days a week, and it's been absolutely crazy. But, you know, I suppose you're waiting sort of for the league to start and really settling down, then just concentrating on each match as it comes, going through your video analysis and working from week to week, and the next team are playing, so it's going to be a lot more specific than it has been already. So yeah, and probably a lot of the crazy stuff, like the you know, but going out meeting people and stuff like that, will probably pull back a bit, and probably will have to pull back a bit, to be honest.
I remember speaking to you at the announcement that you were the manager, and the start of the season seemed like ages away. It's kind of crept up on us, hasn't it?
Yeah, well, I suppose I was officially appointed in November. I joined the club I suppose, on the payroll in January. So I suppose it seems a while ago, and all of a sudden we're here and we're close to the Pats game. But look, it's brilliant, and the reaction and the support to myself has been absolutely fantastic. And you know, I've no doubt that the Pats match, the reaction and even the ticket sales have been that were launched last week have been fantastic. You know what I mean? And the club are, at this stage, are even saying there's a possibility it could be a sellout. So, you know, I don't know if that will be the case, but certainly it looks as though there's going to be a massive, massive crowd. So, it's going to be a good night. But obviously, from my point of view, I'm only really looking at trying to get the result, which is most important.
And against St. Pat's as well, you couldn't have asked for a tougher start.
It's probably been, the pros are, from the club's point of view, it's going to be, a fantastic crowd, fantastic atmosphere. The downside, from my point of view, is that you're ending up playing the champion, who are after strengthening their team with the likes of Fahy coming in, you know, obviously in the Champions League, they're after extending their panel, which is, you know, an enormous panel and serious quality. So there's a serious challenge for us. But, you know, hopefully the adrenaline on the night, you know, hopefully we can make Turner's Cross a very hostile atmosphere on the night. And really, if we start the game well and, you know, everyone is buzzing there, you never know.
We've spoken about getting the crowds back as well. I mean, like, it's imperative for the success of this club that the crowds do come back, because they had dwindled in the last couple of years. So getting an average crowd of maybe 4,000 a game is vital, I suppose.
Huge for the club. You see what people, yeah, I suppose it's hard to, they and I keep saying this, you know, people expected, like, well, when I was appointed, all of a sudden we're going to go from mid-table to winning this and winning that. Doesn't happen that way. You know, we haven't been, since Forrest took over the club in 5 years ago, we haven't been anywhere near challenging, because obviously we had to spend our time in the first division. We had to get out of the first division, and the last 2 years we finished mid table. And there's huge challenges ahead, but the potential is there and the opportunity is there, I believe. But it's going to take a bit of time. What we have to do is build a strong Cork side that over the next couple of years that we're up challenging, and we are a difficult team to beat, and that in our own patch that certainly we give value for money, that our own supporters can see that we are a serious team, and we're putting up to all the teams that come down, rather than what I believe is that some of the teams have had an easy run for the last couple of years in Cork. But I suppose while it's crucial for the people to come back, is because if the people don't come through the gate, the club won't survive. End of story. And this is our 30 year in football. We've won 2 FAI Cups and we've won 2 league championships. It is much more difficult for a provincial team, in my opinion, to win the league, because in Dublin it's a merry-go-round. Team players go from Pats to Rovers and Bows or Shells in the oldest, whatever way. That's the way they move. Whereas, you know, if you look at it, that the travelling that's involved is enormous, because every second week your nearest game is 2-3 hours away, and that's just the way it is, and the costs are phenomenal. So, like, if the people don't come through the gate, the club can't survive, and end of story.
Speaking of league championships, it's 20 years since you won as a player with Cork City. What are your memories of that team?
Memories were fantastic at the time, because I suppose, Rory, I'd been with the club 7 years, and look at, we 91 we lost the league in the last game of the season. 92 we were after losing the cup, and it came to a situation where we hadn't won anything, and you're just wondering, is it going to happen? So obviously to get over the line, 93 was fantastic. And you know, look at, I was fortunate to be with a fantastic bunch of players as well at the time, and most of them Cork guys as well. Like, you know,
it was a fantastic squad, wasn't it?
Well, it was, and it's different to nowadays, because that time you had a panel of 15. You tugged out 13, and there was no such thing as being injured. you just played.
Finally, John, have you set any targets for yourself personally, and have you set a target of the players that you've told them that you want to finish the season?
Well, look, I suppose the big thing for us is that I'd be disappointed at the end of the season if we're not a very competitive team, and that, well, I want to send out the message that when teams come to play us in Cork, that they leave Cork knowing that Cork is a very hostile place again, and we're a strong, aggressive side. And I suppose I hope we could keep in the top four, and that would be our aim. And I've told the lads, I expect us to be there, and I expect us that, you know, we work hard and we put the challenge back in up to teams and try and get into the top four and be competitive. And I suppose, Rory, what I mean by that is that halfway through the season that we're still in the mix and we're still up there. And at the end of the day, while we may not be strong enough to win the league, we don't know, but at the same time that we're in the mix to make it difficult, and that we're not 20 points off the top after 10 games or 20 games. That's what we don't want.
The Big Red Bench on Cork's LFM. That is Cork City boss John Coffey looking ahead to City's opener against St Pat's on March 7th. Kind of speaking very realistically but very positively there. I mean, like, he says they may not be able to challenge for the league, but he wants them not to be miles off, a million miles off. He wants them to be pushing. It's kind of refreshing to hear.
Yeah, and it's kind of like, I suppose, kind of a reality check, because, you know, sometimes in pre-season when there's a lot of transfers and a lot of positive signings that there has been at City, sometimes, I don't know, things get out of hand and people start thinking, oh, maybe we could win the league this season. But it's been really realistic. I mean, if you finish mid-table one season, the next season, it's very rare that somebody can go on and win the league. So I think he wants to build at City, and this season is going to be the first part of it. And like, I find him very impressive.
Yeah.
And I'm very excited to see what his Cork City team is going to be like.
Yeah, really looking forward to that game against St Pat's on March 7th. They're playing Cove Ramblers in a friendly on Wednesday night down in Cove, which you might try and get down to just to see what the team is looking like ahead of the start of the season. But really, really looking forward to that game in Turner's Cross. Should be a fantastic atmosphere. Hopefully a massive crowd as well. It's not on TV, which is a massive help for the crowd. Get the crowds back, get the atmosphere back. I suppose has been lacking a bit in the last couple of years, but I'm excited.
So am I, and you know, I'm very excited to have a look at some of the younger players who kind of broke through last year. The likes of Danny Morrissey, the likes of John Kavanagh, and Gary Buckley, and these guys, they really impressed me last season. And I think, I mean, the kind of experience they got under their belt and another pre-season and all that kind of stuff, I think they're really going to push on this season. So, I mean, like positive, but we're not getting carried away, I suppose.
That's it. Right, still to come on the show, going to be looking back on Cork versus Laois, going to talk Fitzgibbon Cup, and we're going to talk to two fighters ahead of the Sion Warriors fight night on Saturday night in Neptune Stadium. That's all to come between now and 7 o'clock on the Big Red Bench.
The Big Red Bench. Cork's Red FM.
Listening to The Bench, Roy and Joe here with you until 7 o'clock. If you want to get in touch with us, tweet us at Big Red Bench. You can text us as well, 083-317-3336. And don't forget, our podcast from yesterday is online, redfm.ie/sport. And tonight's show will be online a little bit after the show as well. Going to talk Gaelic Games. Cork beat Laois in the Allianz Hurling League Division 1B last night. 14-7 is how it finished. Pat Horgan scoring 6, Alan Cadigan at 3, Seamus Harrandy scoring 2, and William Egan and Christopher Joyce both scoring a point each. Dara O'Crohor was in Port Laois for the Irish Examiner last night. He spoke to Joe a short time ago, and in classic Irish fashion, they started with the weather.
Well, it certainly made it very difficult, Joe, and it was a factor. I mean, the wind was so strong that in the second half, Cork had it in the first half, Laois had it in the second half, and Owen Riley, the Laois goalkeeper, actually poked the ball wide at the other end of the field. That's how strong it was. Now, I've never seen that in my years watching a hurling match.
Wow.
It was a lot of double taking going on up in the press box. Did that just happen? But that was the way it, you know, that made it very difficult for Cork in the first half. They probably used it quite well. In terms of, obviously, we know the style of play they have, but Laois have been using a sweeper ever since Cheddar Plunkett took over last year, and to good effect. But Cork were able to get scores from distance, either from frees or from play. Patrick Horgan got a few nice ones. William Egan got a very good one, actually, from tight in the left sideline off his left-hand side.
Okay.
William Egan was probably the best player on the pitch last night, but that enabled Cork to probably, they led by 8 points at half time, but without really causing a whole lot of trouble inside. It was all from distance. I guess one guy you'd have picked out, Seamus Harrandy, had 2 points, and his sort of aerial strength was notable. The one guy inside was causing a bit of trouble was Alan Cadigan, who scored 2 points in the first half. He was quieter in the second half, but they get one more just at the end.
Yeah.
But look, so that went, obviously it just made it very difficult. But Laois, who had it in the second half, didn't really have the attacking edge, and even as Cheddar Plunkett said afterwards, you know, maybe they were a bit late in moving a man forward, but he was wary of, you know, the pace obviously that Cork possess at the other end of the pitch. But So look, it was always going to be difficult, and I'd say most games over the weekend were like that, you know.
Yeah, like you said, Cork led 11-3 at the break, so like obviously they only scored 3 points in the second half. Should fans be a little bit concerned about that? Because like I suppose, putting the context, they are playing Laois, no disrespect to them, in Division 1B. You probably expect more from them?
Yeah, I mean, they had 10 wides in the first half, and I asked Jimmy Barry Murphy about that afterwards, and he didn't hide from it. He said, yeah, a lot of them were bad wides, particularly in the first half, and that was an issue against Limerick as well. When sort of they could have put Limerick away, even when Limerick were coming back, they had a couple of chances to go back to sort of 2 points up and that type of thing again, and missed them. They missed some quite bad ones yesterday. They missed a few in the second half as well, but that win was absolutely, like, there were so many that looked in target, and suddenly the wind took it away, or they just dropped like a stone.
Yeah.
But what would have been a concern was that they weren't able to work it in, you know, where the wind, because like obviously Cork moved the ball quickly and run a lot, and so driving the ball 70 yards into the wind shouldn't really be a factor. So that would be a little concern. But you know you had a couple of new players there. You know you have some inexperience there, like in Michael O'Sullivan and Alan Cadigan, who I said played well. Jamie Collin, you'd have probably liked to have seen a bit more. But Seamus Harnady played, I think Seamus played about 50 minutes in his first game back from injury, and Pat Cronin had his first start, taken off at half time. And sort of Jimmy said afterwards that they probably maybe went a couple of weeks too early with Patrick, but that he'll definitely improve his fitness levels, wouldn't be great. Stephen Moylan didn't do too badly when he came on, looked lively enough. But look, the last time Cork were in Port Laois playing Laois, they scored 10 goals and 20 points.
Yeah, I remember that, right?
And won by 36 points. This time they only scored 14 points. But I would say Laois are much, much improved, you know, and they did beat Offaly the last day. They showed good form last year, and they're continuing to improve. And with that sweeper, it's just harder to break down when you can't drive the ball over the bar from 70 yards. So, look, there's plenty of improvement in Cork. There's no doubt about that.
Yeah, a tough night to play, right? I suppose as it stands now, Limerick have a 16-point lead on Cork in the scoring difference. Limerick playing Wexford next, and Cork up against Offaly. Can you see maybe, or even speaking to Jimmy last night, can you see him kind of like letting the lads off the Laois and just going for it and try to blitz teams in the remaining few games?
Yeah, I think so. As I say, you know, and I mean, they started really well last week against Limerick as well. So, you know, it's hard to know when you don't know what sort of fitness work or what work even teams have done the day before or anything like that. But, I mean, any plans that they would have had for last night would just have been gone out the window in those conditions. It was just get the win and get the hell out there, like, you know. And looking at some of the games, I wasn't out working today, but looking at some of the games, the conditions just weren't as bad, you know. So I would imagine, so I mean, they have to, it's like that age old thing in rugby where you talk about getting the four tries for the bonus point. You have to make sure you win the game first. And everyone has these victories guaranteed or given to Cork already, but they have to go out and win them. Wexford will be sort of, Wexford have 2 wins already, so it'll be interesting to see how they shape up against Limerick. Obviously, Limerick, did serious damage to Antrim today, and Cork undoubtedly will have to look at that game, you know, and try and repeat that if they want to be promoted, you know. But you know what? I don't know that Jimmy Barry Murphy that is going to be the be all and end all of his year. Ultimately, like, you know, it'll upset supporters and others maybe much more than Jimmy if that doesn't happen. You know, I mean, Limerick have been down there the last few years and it didn't stop them winning a Munster championship. He's getting the try players, and there will be improvement undoubtedly as the year goes on, I would say.
Big Red Bench on Cork's LFM. That is Darragh O'Crohour of the Irish Examiner, looking back on Cork's win over Laois last night in the Division 1B of the Allianz Hurling League. Now, a huge game next Friday in Belfast as CIT and UCC face off in the Fitzgibbon Cup semi-final. The quarter-finals are played earlier this week. CIT had a comprehensive win over NUI Galway. UCC had a hard-fought win over UCD. So look ahead to finals weekend in Belfast. Joe called down to CIT's Bishopstown campus this week, where he spoke to team captain John Cronin and Bill Cooper.
Yeah, feeling's good now. We've trained hard now, so we're just looking forward to it. Obviously, what we set up at the start of the year to get to the weekend, and we're just really looking forward to it, just looking to keep ourselves ticking over, you know, and do what we can do, just control the controllables as well as we can, just prayer writing. Really looking forward to it now.
Yeah, like just in terms of like peaking at the right time, do you think you've got that side of things right?
Yeah, in fairness, like the lads have gone so scientific and stuff, like they have everything for us, like physios, video analysis, even diets, like, and we're coming right time, like, the training that we've done with Con Burns is exceptional, like, you know, and he'd be a fierce fella, less is kind of a more, and that's the approach we're kind of taking, especially with fellas playing in inter-county National League 21s, it all comes on them, and in fairness, like, the workload is never too much, it's all sharp, quick, scientific, and, you know, you couldn't ask for a better setup, to be honest, and I think we're coming good in the right time now, to be honest.
Yeah, Bill, what about the win in the quarter-final this week? You must have been very, very happy with the performance, really.
Yeah, we were. No, yeah, it was good. Good to get a home quarter final, and we're kind of where we want to be now at the start. Like we wanted to get to, everything is about just getting to the weekend, and we know anything can happen then. So yeah, we're very happy with where we are.
Yeah, like what were you most pleased with the other day though, as a group, I suppose.
I thought some of the individual performances, like John Adwyer, Michael Sullivan, John, played very well. I thought it was a very good team effort. Like our backs were well on top for the whole game, and they were just kept feeding ball into the forwards. Like, and we were it was tight enough. Well, we felt it was still there for in the melting pot at half time. We weren't trying to drop our performance, and thankfully we put up a score then in the end.
Yeah, like I was just looking at your results this year, and pretty much all the wins have been pretty comprehensive. You must be so pleased with how it's going so far.
Yeah, we are very pleased, but we've done a lot of work, to be honest. You know, I think it was some like 90 odd sessions since second week of September, I think, so we've done a lot, and you know, it's kind of paying dividends now, to be honest. Yeah. Like we were training days there and all, 6-7 o'clock and stuff, like, you know, and there were still 30 odd lads, 30 plus lads training, because they all in goal is to win the fits, like, and that's where we set out to start here, and that's where we're going, hoping to get, like, and I think we're going well now, in fairness, and I feel like everyone's bought into it. That was the main thing, that we drive it ourselves, and we've bought into it from 1 to 35, I think.
Yeah, like obviously you can go out and like play your own game, and the opposition is the opposition, you can do nothing about that. Do you know the way the wins have been so kind of comprehensive though, and maybe I suppose like would you maybe prefer a little bit of a sterner test kind of heading into semi-final weekend?
Well, I think that, like, to be honest, I remember playing the first game against LIT, and I remember waking up the next morning calling a couple of lads, and I was like, geez, lad, that was some battle alone. And I tell you, I've played now, this is my third year playing fits, and it was one of the toughest battles I ever played. And against GMIT then, it was a bit of a roller coaster. We had to go up in the morning and then go up into a pitch then that wasn't, well, it was good for this time of year, but it was fierce heavy on the legs. So all these tests were mentally challenging for us, like, and we came out with them with flying covers, like, you know. But you look at the score, but you have to look at the work right then, the hooks and the blocks and stuff, and that's what we really took pride in ourselves, is our work rate. And at the end of the day, we always said it doesn't matter who scores, to be honest, like, even though they might be run up a big score, but you have to mentally prepare yourself for every game. And you know, that's what we found so pleasing about from it.
Yeah, like, Bill, when you ever talk to I suppose players who've played on Fitzgibbon Cup winning teams, they always talk about the bond in the group and how that's really important, especially like I suppose getting to the semi-final weekend and on semi-final weekend. Like, have the management done anything to kind of knit you together as a group in any kind of special way?
I think we've an absolutely fantastic management in place. We couldn't really ask for any more. They're like, it's a kind of an open door policy. Like, you can kind of go and ask them anything you want to ask. If you need, you know, pointers on where to improve, they're more than willing to converse with us all the time. I think they've created a bond, like, with the management. You can see that they have a great chemistry themselves. Like, they work very well together, and they work tight knit. And so that leads over then into the players. Like, you know, when you see that going on the sideline, it's always a great bonding effect for the players as well.
And like, I suppose
like if you look at last year's team and this year's team, like there's a lot of players who were around last year. How important is that as well for the group to stay so tight knit, I guess?
Yeah. There's a good number of lads that were involved with the last few years. John has been involved. Michael Sullivan has been involved. I think this is his fourth year involved. There's a good blend of experienced Fitz players and more youthful lads that are just coming in now for a first or second year. So I think we've a very good mixture of experience and youth. But we're under no illusions. We know that the test that we're up against in the next round against UCC. So we're just looking at the semi final, and we're not looking past that.
Obviously people are going to look back over the last games you played against UCC in the competition, and they've beaten you the last 2 years. Is it hard to get that out of your head, or is that even spoken about?
Well, to be honest, it's swiped clean. For me personally, and for the team, what's done is done. You know, they were two great games, and UCC came out on top, and fair play to them. They were deserving winners, but you know, we're only looking forward to Friday, and whatever happened in the past. We can only look and control what's in front of us for Friday. And, you know, hopefully we'll come out right side this one now. And we're really looking forward to it. You know,
yeah. I suppose the thing about those games, I think it was a 1-point defeat and a 2-point defeat. So over the last years, especially, there's nothing between the sides.
Yeah, that's it. And I suppose it's a credit to both us and UCC, you know, to have put out such good games. You know, just like Fitz is all about a drop of a ball, drop of a hat. Really, you know, anything could happen. And we're just really looking forward to it. And hopefully, you know, the ball might bounce in our favour now next Friday. And if it does, we'd be delighted.
Yeah, I know you know Conor Lehan fairly well. Will it be kind of special lining out against him?
Myself and Conor will be good buddies. And he'd be good buddies with all the fellas. So he'd play with Cork and with Jamie, you know, and Bill. So, you know, to be good enough, I'll crack. Like what happens in the hour stays within the hour. And then before and after, we'd have a bit of crack between Snapchat now and Twitter now. There'd be a few things flying, but we'll shake hands at the start and shake hands at the end, and that's what Fitz is all about. We couldn't say any bad word about you, and we'd hope they couldn't say any bad word about us.
Absolutely. Bill, have you seen the play this year, or have you seen tapes of them yet, or will that be in the week ahead?
I went down to the UCD game the other day. They were very impressive. They were very impressive, very very composed, and they beat a very good UCD side. We're under no illusions. The challenge that's in place, but I feel we're well up to it and up for it.
What about the long trip up to Belfast? In a way, be like, obviously if it was Pale and Cork, it'd be massive rivalry and they'd be massive hype and buzz, but like, does that kind of level it out a bit? Kind of, it's more of a more normal game because it is up there.
I don't know. Is it a level, or it's just another obstacle, I suppose, or whatever way you want to look at it. It's both teams will be well used to travelling away now. After getting to this stage in the Fitzgibbon, so it shouldn't be too much of a hurdle. Like, I think both teams will relish playing in Belfast for the first time as well. You have to look at the history side of it. It's going to be a great thing to be able to say you're involved in the Fitz weekend in Queen's. So I'd say both teams will look forward to it.
The weekend itself, it seems to be only the players who've played on the show, like who've been there over the weekend, know what it's like. It is a very special thing, is it?
Yeah, well, it is a smashing thing. Like, you know, we said at the start of the year, we meeting between ourselves, and we were looking at it, and we said, like, if you look at the weekend, you see the cream of the crop, and you see all the people who won Fitz medals.
Yeah.
And they, like, the likes of numerous different players, and they all progressing down the county stages. It's a special occasion, without a shadow of a doubt. I was lucky to play 2 years ago on the centenarian one, and it was a special occasion, something that I'll always treasure for the rest of my life. And that's when we lost. So if we can get over the line next week above in Belfast, I'm sure I'll cherish till the day anyway. But it's a special occasion without a shadow of a doubt, you know. And it's great to see that we get such publicity from it. You can see Queen's always tweeting about it, and you even see papers and TG Carroll show the final. Someone told me then that they can stream the semi-finals online, which is another great showcase for hurling, which is, you know, like the county fellas and who fellas wouldn't be in the county fellas be able to spot them. Then, you know, it's great.
Yeah, well, what's the feeling around the college? Is there great excitement and great encouragement, I suppose, from all the boys?
There's a good buzz around. It'll be I think the
It's a great buzz because there's such a rivalry between CIT and UCC, and so I think we're just focused on that game now, and hopefully we can get out on the right side of it, and maybe the competition will open up for us then.
You see, both seem pretty confident, in the ability of the squad. Do you think you can do it? I suppose, it's a kind of a strange weekend, I suppose, because there could be two games so close together. But are you confident going up there?
Oh yeah, very confident. We're confident in our own ability, and we set high standards for ourselves, and we don't accept anything to be below that. You know, I think it's a great challenge for us. Another great challenge for us again. We've always had challenge benchmarks for us throughout the year. And this is another one that we need to meet head on, and hopefully we get over the line, come over the race, which we hope.
But you echo that thought, I suppose?
Yeah, absolutely, absolutely. We're not thinking of the second game of the weekend. No, everything is just focused on 1 hour's hurling, and even 1 hour's hurling broken down then into smaller segments again. You know, start well the rest of it, and we're absolutely focused on UCC, and which I'm sure they're focused on us. So I'm sure it'll be a belter, and I think maybe the last couple of years, the lads been involved 2 years ago and last year, having went through that, hopefully we'll get out on the right side, maybe. A point win would do us.
Yeah, great stuff. Best of luck, lads.
Cheers. Thanks very much, lads.
The Big Red Bench on Cork's Red FM, and that is John Cronin and Bill Cooper of CIT as they get ready for their Fitzgibbon Cup semi-final against UCC on Friday. Best of luck to both Cork sides there. Now, we are just 6 days away from another massive Sion Warriors card in Neptune Stadium. UFC veteran Paul Daly's on the card as well. There's an all-Cork battle as William Murphy of Sion Warriors takes on Mike Kelleher of Cork Tie for the Irish Super Featherweight title, while Shane O'Neill of Cork Tie takes on Ricky Sewell of the UK. Now, Shane and William called in to us to look ahead to the fight tonight. First, ask William, how much training camp is going?
Yeah, very good. Getting quite tired now, really, you know, with all the training. So, just ready to go now, you know.
How about you, Shane?
Same as William, just can't wait to get in there now. Can't wait, all the hard work is done, just cutting the weight now and staying away from McDonald's for next week. So, other than that, though, everything's going well.
Do both of you have much weight to cut? Is it quite intense?
Yeah, a few kilos now, yeah. Right.
So it's the same, like, with 4 kilos the last week.
Yeah.
Just going to the sauna after the day before and just close your eyes and wait till you wake up with 4 kg later.
And are you doing much water loading and stuff during the week, or is it just all in the sauna?
Water loading, no, I definitely
would. I would up the amount of water I drink the last week, like, just so I find it easier to cut the weight in the sauna, like, but I wouldn't do too much water loading, like, because I don't want to be fucking floating around.
William, how long is your average, I suppose, training camp? I mean, like, how intense are your training, like?
About 8 weeks, you'd start training quite hard now, you know, and then the last four, you would up it again. So you're training every day, really, like, you know. And then maybe the odd day then when you're really tired and you feel you need a rest for your body and stuff, you take a break then that day, like, you know.
And Shane, are you kind of like in heavy and intense training all this week now, or is the hard training done?
Well, this week now was heavy intense training again, but next week you start cutting down and just concentrating on the weight and just getting into tweaking on your technique and stuff, like. But I suppose the last few weeks all the hard training was done, like, and you never really get a break from it because you're always thinking about the fight, like, you're always trying to distract yourself when you do have a day off, like. But it's very hard to do, like, and the last week now, just trying to cut the weight, as I said, like, just get the last week kg off.
What's Mike doing?
Willie's opponent Mike, like, we were training for a few weeks there, and Mike's after killing three fellas in training, so we have to keep him in the cage now, up in the gym just until the fight.
Yeah, so William Murphy does fight Mike Kelleher of Cork Tie, so there's a bit of a Siam Warriors Cork Tie, I suppose, rivalry.
Mike is my friend as well, so
what's the rivalry?
I'm staring Willie here now intensely.
What's the rivalry like between the two gyms? Is it friendly rivalry, or
it's friendly rivalry.
I hate them all, to be honest. Like, never, now I'm joking. Martin's after doing all these shows and stuff, so really, like, you know, compared to when I started the sport first, like, I would have started when I was about 15, but I even remember watching Willie fight, like, and stuff, and just being mesmerised by, like how intense the fights were and the way that they put their bodies in the lane and stuff. And the shows compared to now have just grown so much, like, and it's all thanks to Martin, really, because he's bought over all the big guns and stuff and brought the people to Neptune. So I like Sam Morris for that reason, but I don't like him for other reasons.
And we'll talk about the rest of the car a little bit later, but tell me about Mike Kelleher, Willie. How much do you know about him?
I know Mike. He's a good fighter. He's round the wheel. Good aggressive style. Kind of like myself. So two of us it'll give good entertainment, you know, today.
If I can just jump in there, as a Fife fan, that fight is really one to look forward to, because both of them, I think, are just going to look at each other for the first 10 seconds, and then after that it's going to be elbows all over the place. Yeah.
Well, Shane, he's your teammate. Tell us what kind of fighter he is.
Like I said, he's after killing three fellas in training, like, so we have him in a cage now at the moment, just waiting to let him loose. Now, Mike's very, like, he's the kind of fella in training you don't, like, you want to avoid sparing him, like, because you know you're not going to get an easy one, but he's good to keep you on your toes, like, and like we all push each other in training, like, we all keep each other sharp, and everyone has bad days where you need fellas like that to kind of get it out of you, like, and push yourself even more. But him and Willie's going to be a great fight, like, it's one that everyone, any fight fan, should look forward to, like, because, like I said, both of them aren't going to take a back foot. It's
really great fight. Forward to that one. It's a Cork battle as well, a Cork rivalry as well, just kind of adds to it, doesn't it?
Yeah, big time, yeah.
So Shane, you're fighting Ricky. Is it Sewell or Sewell?
Yeah, I don't know.
Sewell, yeah.
Sewell, yeah.
We'll go with Sewell.
Whatever noise the morning, I'm going to call him. Anyway.
From the UK, have you been able to find out much about him? Have you seen his fights?
I haven't seen much of his fights. Like, I've seen a few clips from fighting. I know he's a WBC British champion at the weight I'm fighting him at, and he's come up with day in the last year, like, because he fought Andy Gray last year in Neptune. It was, I think it was a year ago exactly, like, and I was in the corner for Andy that time. So I know he's a quality fighter, like, and I know that he's drawn a very good prospect and all. He's a big name in England at the moment, but I've nothing to lose in my eyes, like. I'm just going to give it my all and do what I always do, like, train. I love a hard fight later, that's why we're in it, like. There's no such thing as an easy fight at this stage. So
And what's it like fighting in Neptune as well, in front of, I suppose, your hometown, your home fans?
Great
atmosphere. There's no atmosphere really like it, to be honest. I've been to a lot of shows around Europe, big shows, and geez, Neptune, we can't be.
Yeah, the Cork crowd, like, seriously, like, once I get a few drinks and I'm like, it's mad.
Yeah, they're really
I've been even to Lumpini Stadium in Thailand, like, the atmosphere there is unbelievably electric because of the gamblers and stuff, but in Neptune it's kind of similar with all the people, because everyone knows someone fighting, like, and everyone. And after all these big shows, like, people seem to know the fighters more, like.
And they're getting a better idea of how you box and know as well, like.
Like, even the scoring, like, people be cheering when there's a kick landed and when there's a knee landed, you hear the crowd going, hey, compared to before when everyone was just like, punch him.
So will you have much support there in the night, both of you?
I've no friends, so
he's most popular in Cork.
Nah, my mum's coming up right, but my mum might come as well, we see.
I suppose we're all looking forward to seeing you all getting punched in the head, all your friends.
My friends can't wait to see me get elbowed. They're all hoping I get cut, I think, because they're saying I haven't got cut yet, like, and they're all kind of hoping I get one, but
looks.
I'm not really that good looking anyway. That's why I'm on radio. They wouldn't leave me on TV.
I suppose we all know about Aaron O'Callaghan, but who else should we be looking out for from your gym on the night?
On the night, there's some lads there now, like Johnny Sheehan. He's a big fight there now. He's fighting Kane Crowley from Dublin. Another person there now is Owen McCarthy. He's fighting a lad from Fermoy there, Damien. Be a good fight as well. Keane Duggan there as well as another lad, and Steve O'Mahony, who's trying really hard for this now, so should be a really good fight as well. So like, the lads are good. Like, Aaron is obviously one of the biggest fights, you know, because two lads, it's for an Irish title as well at 57, so it's a fight that everyone's looking forward to, so that should be a great fight.
And how much of an inspiration has Aaron been, kind of considering he's been all
I don't know, he's around the world as well, and he's getting on big shows, so like Jesus, it's great for the gym, you know, like he fought in January in Yakow show, which is really big, you know, 10,000 people at it, like. And I mean, when he's doing things like that, it's great, you know. We've another lad there, Ryan Sheehan, who's fighting on a big show the week after our show in Bolton with some of the top fighters around the world on it, like, you know. So it's great for the gym, like, you know.
Shane, who else from your gym is on the card?
From our own gym, we have obviously Mike Keller, who's fighting Willie, and we have Greg Hart, who he was in Australia for a year. He got some good fights over there. I think he was working in the kangaroo sanctuary as well or something. he was fighting the kangaroos as training. But Greg always, he's kind of the same, you know. Everyone in our gym has the same kind of attitude, bring the fight to whoever you're fighting, like. And he's up against Pat Hickey, who Willie fought in his last fight, and Pat lost that fight, so I suppose Pat's going to try to come back and show what he's made of, like. But Greg, like I said, Greg's well up for it. I mean, another fella in Nick, we call him Nick the Greek because he's from, obviously, from Greece, like. But I can't pronounce his second name. It's I'm going to try there, Constantinopoulos. Nick's a good boxer, like. He was boxing background, like, and he's another fella, like, who'll bring the fight, like I said, like. Everyone's kind of in order to me all of the attitude to go forward, like, and just give it your all. So we're all looking forward to the fight now.
As fight fans, how much are you both looking forward to, I suppose, the two main events? No, Paul Dale, we get all the attention, I suppose, from non-Thai fans, I suppose, because of his UFC background.
Well, Paul Paul's a big name because of his UFC background, because of his MMA background, and because MMA is so big at the moment, like everyone would even heard of him, even if they're not involved in fight sports, they would have heard the name Paul Daly, some of them. But I think I'm looking forward to Enrico Kell and Watson more, like, because two of them, like, it's such a clash of styles, I can't call it. Like, Watson's so powerful, so technical, and Kell is so tricky, like, you know, you don't know why he's going to come up with next. So,
and he's been busy a lot lately, like, you know, Enrico Kell, he's fighting actually tonight.
Yeah. He will, like, I'd say jumping anyway. He's kind of the guy, tough, like, yeah, tough as nails. Like, and I think, as far as I know, like, I think he's fighting, I don't know if he's fighting Bacow, but again, I don't know. He's fighting.
Semi tonight, he's fighting the Canadian fella.
Oh, yeah, he's and so, well, thank God he's not fighting Bacow, because that would be, yeah.
Yeah, there's no elbows in it, so.
Yeah, he won't get cut,
Finally, boys, probably a stupid question to ask fighters, and it usually is, but how confident are you heading into next Saturday night?
You have to be confident, like, so.
Yeah, you have to be. If you don't believe in yourself, I suppose, there's no chance or no hope of getting in there, like, so you have to just, like I said, like, me and Willie both know we've tough fights, like, but there's no such thing as an easy fight either, like, yeah. So.
You wouldn't want an easy fight, like,
yeah,
you
wouldn't
want
an easy fight. Like,
at this stage, now, we just want to get in there and give it our all and see what happens then, so.
Yeah. Well, lads, thanks, man, for coming in to us. Best of luck on the night. Might chat to you afterwards.
Thanks a lot. Cheers.
That's Shannon Ian and William Murphy looking ahead to Siam Warriors next Saturday night. Siam Warriors, a massive card again in Neptune Stadium. And as we mentioned, Watson and Kell going to be an absolutely huge fight. Paul Daly in the card as well. We're both looking forward to this one.
Yeah, absolutely, and good to see the lads in yesterday. They were in great form and in great shape as well. Obviously, they're confident themselves. Are you confident those two boys can win their fights next Saturday?
Oh, yeah, the boys are massively confident, like, you know. So I'm just looking forward to an absolutely cracking night of fights.
Yeah.
We've never been let down by a Siam Warriors card. No. Anytime we've gone to Neptune Stadium, it's always been top class. It's always been absolutely fantastic. It's been a great night's entertainment. The shows are getting bigger. The crowds are getting bigger and more educated, as the lads alluded to there as well, so yeah. It's just going to be a great night. Can't wait.